Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and at your convenience on voiceofvashon.org. Today, we're exploring the lives and contributions of therapy animals with retired psychologist and educator and currently trainer, Jenna Risdahl. Welcome, Jenna.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is such a fascinating topic for any animal lover. Tell us, how long have you been training therapy animals, and what brought you to this avocation?
So, as a therapist, I was working in the schools, and I used to bring my golden retriever with me. And that was back in the days when people in the schools could bring animals in, and I noticed how wonderful he was with the kids, of course, golden retrievers. But I also noticed other benefits, such as working with autistic kids. He was absolutely amazing. He gave them the opportunity to be social in a way that was non-threatening and non-judgmental. With special ed kids, he was able to bring them out to be more verbal, to interact with them and give them commands and watch them actually obey them. So I got in touch with Pet Partners and got him certified so that he could be in the schools, and then they passed some laws in the school district that you couldn't bring animals unless they were there for educational reasons. So we plugged right into that system because he was definitely educational.
Uh-huh. So tell us about Pet Partners.
So Pet Partners is an organization that has been around 40 years. It actually started as Delta Society. People may know that in this area particularly. But it's a national and international organization, and it's developed to have rigorous guidelines and training for therapy animal teams, which consists of an animal and an handler. We call them handlers. And they work together as a team to help people and strengthen that human bond. And we can go into a plethora of benefits.
Oh, yes. And I want to. You draw a distinction between therapy animals and service or support animals. What is the difference?
So both service animals and emotional support animals support their particular person, whereas therapy animals support other people. They work with their handler as a team, but they're there to help other people. And an emotional support animal, for an example, does not have any training. All you need is a letter from a doctor who works with you or a psychologist who works with you saying that you need to have this dog around to help you, usually for a mental health reason. Not always, but usually. Then these animals are allowed to go with you places on airplanes and things like that. But what happens is, because they're not trained, a lot of incidents have happened that are unfortunate. And yeah, I'm sure you've heard press about that. Service animals, on the other hand, are highly trained. They're trained for several years. They say in the business that by the time an animal is trained, they're worth $65,000.
Holy moly.
The amount of training.
Wow.
Into that. It's amazing to watch them work. The guide dogs for the blind, any other kind of service animal. So they're certified, they're trained, and they can go anywhere with their owner because they support that owner in so many ways.
And so they're sure assured that they're going to be safe in any situation, whereas an emotional support animal might not be so reliable or so trustworthy.
I actually heard of an incident from a flight attendant. I take one of my therapy dogs to the airport, and she raced over to the dog and said, "Oh, it's so wonderful to see this dog." And there was an incident where an emotional support animal jumped from his owner's lap, bit a person in the leg, but it was a femoral artery, and they had to turn the plane around and land.
Oh, my God.
So things can happen.
Yeah, that's way beyond the emotional support peacock that we heard about.
Right. And I think it's also good for people to know that service animals are usually bred to be service animals. So their behavior characteristics are to be calm, they're very smart, and they're very bonded with the people that they work with.
So that brings me to a question about therapy animals. How do you identify a dog or another animal that is going to be a good therapy animal?
So this is part of the initial training that I give to people when they come in and say, oh, I have this wonderful dog. He's great with people. Not so great with other animals. But what you really need, and it is part of the dog's personality, they need to find joy in being with people. It needs to be their passion. They love people, and they're totally fine around other dogs. They can't be aggressive. They can't be fearful. They need to be calm, confident. And some of those skills you can build in, but some of them you can't. So I ask people to be really honest with themselves. Is your dog going to be a good fit to help someone else? Because that's what you're doing.
So is that where the process of creating a therapy animal team starts? Is it with the person who has a pet already? It doesn't start with the dog.
It starts with the person, yes. And a lot of people, once they've had a therapy dog, will go to breeders and say, I want a dog that you know will be calm, because you can do some testing with dogs, some personality testing to see that to kind of know that a dog's going to be calm in their lifetime if they're raised properly.
So when you're training these dogs mm-hmm. and their people, do you take them into all kinds of different situations? What sort of training do they go through that might be different from a service animal?
So the training is different in that the person goes through a course online, and then they also have to be evaluated. And sometimes there's a lack between the person going through a course online and not having a course for the animals to actually practice with the owner. There are videos online of how to practice and things like that. You know, YouTube has everything. But some people do offer therapy dog courses. Some of the dog trainers in the area, I offer one on Vashon. It's free. You can come up and just join our class and see if your dog is a fit, and then we work on the skills that you need to be a team. So it's best if you do go to a class.
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
Right.
When therapy dogs go into various situations, don't they have to have some sort of certification?
So on the island, for example, when I'm training dogs, we train up at the high school. And that's a very distracting environment. You want to teach them to be focused and not distracted when they're working. So we can walk around the high school. We can walk past students doing various things. But also, we'll go out in the community. There's probably 9 establishments, business places on the island where you can go with dogs. So we troop through as a group, and people are really engaged and enthusiastic about our coming in.
You know, I wasn't surprised to read that therapy dogs go into healthcare situations and senior facilities and hospitals, but I was surprised to read that they go into airports and, libraries doesn't surprise me a whole lot, but transit facilities, university campuses, court systems. Mm-hmm. What do they do in those places?
So a lot of times they have therapy dogs in the waiting room. If a child has to go to court, say for a CPS situation, mm-hmm. the dog is there to calm the child and keep everything copacetic. One time I was testing a student as a psychologist, and the student told his mother later, she had Riley in the room, and it just made me feel so comfortable and so calm, I wasn't even worried about the test.
Wow, that's impressive. So why would a therapy dog go into an airport?
I take my dog Rain to the airport, and it's one of the most satisfying experiences because there are a lot of stress travelers. We don't go to the baggage claim where everybody's rushing out, but we go into the kiosk area where all the food court is, and we have a little station, and she has a vest on that says Pet Me. And people go by and they look, because usually it says do not pet. And I go, yeah, you can pet her. And they come rushing over, families, people, volleyball teams, football teams. Men in suits are down on the floor with these dogs saying, I've had to wait in this airport 5 hours. This is the best airport ever, the best part of my day.
Wow, that does sound like fun. I think you're going to have people signing up to be partner teams soon.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does sound like fun. You have a couple therapy dogs in your own household, and you're speaking about them a little bit. Tell us how you recognized their skills in this area and about your personal bond with them.
I was really fortunate. Both of my dogs are career-changed guide dogs. So they were in the puppy program to become guide dogs for the blind. And at different times, Rain is 10, so I got her 9 years ago. And she was career-changed because she had a heart murmur. And they have to be perfect. And she was at the top echelon of training. She was an amazing, calm, wonderful dog who loves people. So I knew immediately when I got Rain that she would be a good therapy dog. The former Golden Retriever I was talking about was also just so good with kids and people and other dogs that I knew he would be a good therapy dog. My little girl, Fox, who's in the studio with us and is 3 years old,
she's doing very well.
Sleeping on the floor. Mm-hmm. She was a bit more of a challenge because she was career changed for excessive barking. And you cannot be a guide dog if you bark a lot. So I have worked really hard with her to get that barking to stop. Because when you are passing the evaluation, your dog cannot bark at all, at other dogs, at anything.
Well, that would be embarrassing.
So I was keeping my fingers crossed, and mostly hers is, if she doesn't know a dog, she has to bark a little bit. And we've really worked, and that's how I recognize.
There are probably people listening who have similar problems. I'm one of them. How do you train a dog to bark less?
There are various situations. I like to start with positive reinforcement, you know, animal behavior theory, reinforce the behaviors you want to see. So sometimes that doesn't work. You know, I have treats in my hand. Okay, here's your treat. But usually I can distract her, and she will come to me for the treat and forget about the other dog. And dogs are habitual. They'll get into the habit. When that doesn't work, I'm not a fan of aversion therapy, but there are sprays that you can use. So when they bark at other dogs, I happen to use Banaca, which is a breath spray.
Yes.
And they do not like peppermint, spearmint flavor. So I just spray it in her mouth when she barks at other dogs.
As soon as she opens it to bark.
And they do not like that. So now all I have to do is have the bottle in my hand, and that's a deterrent.
That's a great idea.
It
Did you hear that, folks?
It's from a dog trainer.
I'm taking that one home.
Yes.
What would a therapy animal intervention be? I read in your material that they sometimes perform interventions. Under what circumstances or in what kind of situation would a therapy animal perform an intervention?
So we call that a therapeutic intervention. And there are animal-assisted activities where you go in and do things with people. But an intervention is just simply going in to help someone in some situation. It could be reading with kids. That's an intervention.
Oh.
You're helping that child love reading. We don't really go in a reading program to help them learn to read. We help them learn to love reading and be in a non-judgmental situation. So an intervention is just simply working under the direction of some facility, like a school, like a care center, where you work with people.
So it wouldn't necessarily be a crisis?
No.
Okay.
No. That's a whole different kind of training. And Pet Partners actually does have crisis training.
Yeah, I noticed that. Animal-assisted crisis response. Mm-hmm. What does that do?
So that teaches a dog a little bit more high distractions, to not react to certain things. And it's not really that much more than being a therapy dog, but you just want to make sure that your dog is geared for that, because you might have a therapy dog who goes through an evaluation and the evaluator would say, you know, your dog is still young, highly active, and a little bit more enthusiastic than we might want. So I would only want to see you work with one-on-one. And you can say that and put that on there.
I see.
Certification. Or you can say this dog could work with anybody and gets a complex rating.
So would a therapy dog work with folks who might have PTSD?
Definitely. They're really good with people with PTSD. You can also get a service dog for PTSD or an emotional support dog. I would more recommend a service dog. I think some of the vets are actually training dogs to work with PTSD. They have it as a program to help them. They help themselves, and then the dogs help other people as well.
Vets as in veterans.
Correct.
Sorry. Not veterinarians.
We're talking dogs and people.
That's
here.
Right. Yes. I see that you do animal-assisted workplace well-being. What is that about?
So when I was taking my dog to the administrative offices in the district that I worked in, people, the administrators in the building, secretaries, office managers, everybody knew the day that he was coming in and would just flock to my office. That's work-assisted interventions because they'd say, oh, I need my Riley fix. So it's helping people at work just to feel good.
You know, I think the workplace as we have known it up until the pandemic could use a lot of softening and a lot of stroking, if you will.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about an instance where you were personally observed the benefits of animal interaction with a human in need. What's one of your favorite stories?
So I think one of my favorite stories was I was working with an autistic boy, and he was verbal, and he wasn't sure about the dog, but we were on the playground, and there was a hill on the playground, and the boy laid down and rolled down the hill, and my dog laid down and rolled down with him, and they hugged at the end, and he just thought that was the greatest thing ever. Another situation was a special ed teacher had a student who was totally nonverbal, and he would have these meltdowns. So one time I thought, well, maybe if I bring Riley in when he's having one of these meltdowns, it'll help him. And he had a dog at home. So we brought Riley in. He just totally de-escalated. So ever after, she would call and say, we need you in the special ed room. He's having a meltdown again.
Are you on call?
Not really.
Yeah, that sounds, this is not a paid position, right?
No.
So, being on call would be really over, above and beyond.
Right.
The call.
Yeah, we schedule our visits usually. And that happened to be at the workplace.
Your pet partner's literature cites a number of studies that communicate the benefits of therapy animals. Can you tell us some of the statistics or some of the information about what therapy animals can do for humans?
So one thing I think a lot of people already know is petting a dog lowers your blood pressure. So it just has that calming effect immediately. It slows your rate of breathing. It lowers your blood pressure. And it's a stress soother. It helps you feel good. It releases that relaxation hormone. There have been studies that show that older people that have dogs access health care 30% less than people that don't own pets.
That's a lot.
And there have also been studies to say that just people in general that have pets access health care less. I think there was a study that said in 10 years, over $3 billion were saved in health care because of people having pets.
Just in the United States?
Actually, that was in Sweden and Germany.
Oh.
But, you know, we don't have health care in the United States.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Not that kind.
Uh-huh. So, maybe dogs can put doctors out of business.
Yes.
At some point.
So it helps you keep fit and active. Your dog needs to go for a walk. It's a good way to get outside. It's a good way to keep you connected with people. I don't know if you've walked with a dog. They are people magnets.
Mm-hmm.
And people will stop and see your dog. Helps you lose weight because you're out there more. It adds meaning and purpose to your life.
I remember when my sons got a puppy because it was a chick magnet.
Exactly. It helps with depression. And actually, it's a good thing to have a dog in the house when you have kids because it helps you not have allergies in the future.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the likelihood that a child will develop an allergy is?
To animals, not to
everybody. To animals, right.
Yes,
right.
Pets.
Is decreased by having them around in their formative years.
Up to 33%.
That's really impressive.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. What do you have to say about the jokes that cite people bringing their large birds and other strange animals onto airplanes.
You know, you probably don't want to get me started on that. My daughter works in corporate at Alaska Airlines, and she has stories that will make your ears burn. I think it's really a travesty. If you trained the dogs and they had to get a certification, I would be in favor of it. I think they are emotional support. But when they're not trained, it's just not beneficial.
I bet she does have some stories. I once read that dog is the only animal that has chosen to be with humans. And I'm wondering, especially since you work so much with the idea of the bonding between dogs and humans, what do you think about the fact that actually they were wolves that bonded with humans and other animals have not?
I think it's interesting. I think that in a way dogs chose humans. I think it was mutually beneficial for them. I've read some studies on that they realized that that humans could help them with food finding. And being opportunists, as we all are, they took advantage of that situation. So I really can't explain it on a deep level. But
it's interesting because I can understand that they would have liked our garbage and followed mm-hmm. us for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the bonding that happens that is in many ways more intimate than some human bonding is mysterious to me.
It is. And, you know, there are people that are really bonded to their cats as well, and cats can be that way. But in general, they're not like dogs that really, truly form this deep bond.
Yeah, cats have staff.
Yes, they do.
If I wanted to become a member of a therapy animal team with pet partners, what do I have to do and what do I have to know?
The website for Pet Partners, petpartners.org, has so much information on it. And what you need to do is just go onto the website and sign up for an account. And then you can go in and take advantage of all their resources. It tells you how to kind of know if your dog will be a good therapy dog. It tells you what you need to do. Offers you lots of different courses. One of the courses that I really liked on there was canine body language. And it tells you about the body language of your dog and how to read it and how to know. You know, it talks about three different parts, their head, their body, and their tail. They're all indicators of stress or non-stress. So there's just a huge amount of information. You would go on, if you were really interested in being a team, then you would progress to the handler's course. Take the handler's course, take a course with your dog to become a therapy dog, and then you go through an evaluation, which is a rigorous 45-minute evaluation with a skills part. The dog has to be highly obedient. And then it's an aptitude part where your dog really enjoys working with people in perhaps strange situations, people in walkers, people that maybe don't speak right or things like that, and they have to be totally calm in all those situations. So the evaluation and studying for the evaluation in itself is a really satisfying experience.
And the evaluation, it sounds like, is covering both the trainer and, or the handler and the animal.
They're both judged. I'm sorry, they're both scored. We don't judge. We just score.
Somehow judgment has become a bad word.
Yes, yes.
Is there an age limit for dogs?
There's not an age limit for dogs, but if your dog is, you know, has a disability that's going to interfere with his work. I've actually had dogs that have worked with little carts, you know, that carry their back legs. I've mm-hmm. had dogs that are brought in wagons because they're old and they're working with older people. It's like old dogs with old people. So you can work with a disabled dog. There is an age limit for kids. The kids have to be 16 in order to be a handler with an animal.
But there's no upper age limit for trainers or handlers?
No. If you can walk and be able and control your dog, you want your dog to be reliable, controllable, and predictable.
And yourself as well.
Yourself as well. Yes, we do look at people's personalities. If you come in and you're jerking your dog around and yelling at your dog, you've already lost your evaluation.
I can see that. Right. I want to go back to something you said about body language in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give us some examples of body language and what it says?
Sure. That's one of the questions that we'll ask handlers in the evaluation. And if a dog walks in with their tail tucked and their back end kind of rounded under and low, their ears are down, their mouth is in a straight line, that dog is very stressed. And then you need to know, is this dog... can I bring the dog back into what we call the green zone? We have green, yellow, and red zones. Or do I need to leave with my dog from the situation? Is my dog so stressed? Now, if the tail is up and wagging and the ears are forward and the eyes are bright and we call it a W smile, the dog has a big smile on their face and greets you, that's a happy dog. And that's what we want to see. Some of the subtle things are, you know, there's panting, there's whining. And some of those things can be because they're warm and not stressed. So you have to be able to discern, okay, what's my situation? I had a golden retriever that panted a lot. He wasn't stressed. He just panted a lot. So you need to know your dog.
Oh, so the handler is more likely to know the difference between a stressed pant and a warm pant,
right.
A heat pant.
And then there's breed-specific things. Some breeds normally keep their tails tucked. So when I'm doing an evaluation, I will ask the handler, tell me about your breed. Are there any breed-specific things? Some animals keep their ears down, and they don't lift their ears in a happy way that we usually think of.
We're talking with Jenna Risdahl, a handler and a trainer for Pet Partners. She teaches people and dogs to be therapy animals. And we're about out of time, but I have one last question in the last 1 minute that we have. How has the pandemic affected your training and the activity of therapy animals?
It's been really sad because we haven't done our usual visits. We haven't gone to the schools. We haven't gone to the airports. Some people are visiting through windows still. I am still training people to be evaluators. I do it online now instead of traveling around the country. We aren't holding evaluations in person yet. I might do it a one-on-one, but usually we do, you know, 8 or 9 in a day. And now, so there are a lot of people waiting to be evaluated and a lot of people really wanting to be out visiting with their dogs.
And I bet a lot of people who would really like to be receiving therapy from dogs who aren't getting it right now.
Yeah.
So many impacts of the pandemic. Jenna Risdahl, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here on Real Talk today. It's been a pleasure. And can you give the folks one more time the Pet Partners website?
It's petpartners.org. That's all you need to know, and you go sign yourself in.
Thanks very much. And thanks for listening to Real Talk. Thanks for sharing your time with me here on the Voice of Vashon.